Europe, how many divisions? To misquote Stalin's line about the Pope, Ukraine's allies in actual fact have plenty of troops and hardware. But how battle-ready? And is it enough to deter Vladimir Putin's Russia? An emergency summit in Brussels, inviting Volodymyr Zelensky in a show of solidarity in the face of a NATO leader, the United States, that seems to be using Kremlin talking points these days. The sense of urgency illustrated by Germany reaching a deal to revise its constitution so it can ensure its security without U.S. protection. On that score, how fast can Europeans go? And that includes the British, by the way. If their U.S.-made equipment cannot operate without Washington's approval, or in some cases, without its intelligence. We'll ask about intel, nuclear umbrellas, how public opinion feels about the potential end of the continent's post-1945 order. Today in the France 24 debate, we're talking about Europe's race to rearm with this French socialist center, Hélène Conway-Mouret. Thanks for being with us.
Good evening.
You were at that Munich Security Conference where it was a dressing down by the U.S. vice president.
Yes, and I haven't recovered from it yet.
Okay. Retired French Air Force General Jean-Marc Vigilant is the former director of Paris's French War College, L'École Militaire. Thanks for being with us.
Good evening.
L'École de Guerre, excuse me. L'École de Guerre. Yes. You're also with us from joining us from Brussels is Polish journalist Dominika Kozic. Thank you for being with us.
Bonsoir, thank you for invitation.
You can listen, like, and subscribe to the France 24 debate wherever podcasts are streamed. Even in a crisis, the Germans have a reputation for proceeding with caution. But with Donald Trump turning on NATO allies and that big bust-up at the White House last week, it took just 9 days for political rivals to agree on a plan that could trigger the country's biggest stimulus plan since reunification in 1990. Germany's chancellor in waiting, breaking the taboo of big borrowing, perhaps to the tune of 1 trillion euros over the next 10 years.
I want to say it very clearly regarding the threats to our freedom and peace on our continent. Whatever it takes must also apply to our defense.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes, this is a radical shift. General Vigilant, is this something you would have predicted to hear from a German chancellor in waiting?
I used to say that nothing is impossible. We've been surprised for the last years about unpredictable events which eventually occurred. Therefore, we have to be ready for any kind of contingency and not only be in a responsive posture, but be more proactive.
Yeah, because there was a couple of years back, the German chancellor, the outgoing one, who decided to go all in with more spending, but he got shot down by the Constitutional Council, hence this constitutional amendment that's coming up. And now it looks like it's really happening in Germany.
It's really happening, so this is a good news. However, we'll see, and this is something the French industrials are looking for, if this additional money for the defense budget will be spent on American equipment or European equipment. And this will be, I would say, the real call for seeing their commitment to European defense.
Hélène Conway-Mouret, you agree?
Yes, absolutely. I think we were in a new situation where we do have a strong political will being expressed by European leaders that we need to move forward on what France has been promoting for a long time, strategic autonomy, which has been a very bad word and not used by our partners, European partners, as most of them were in the logic of having the US ensuring their protection and their defense.
Did the change happen in Munich with that speech we were talking about earlier, or did the change happen last Friday with what happened in the Oval Office?
Well, just so much is happening every day that I think it's accumulation of all of that. But there was indeed in Munich a kind of a wake-up call that we should have had indeed in the first Trump mandate. We were told already that, you know, there was going to be a shift. He had indicated his, and somehow threatened that he might pull out of NATO and then came back over his decision and so on. And we thought that he was going to be in the same mood. But I do recall Hillary Clinton last year saying, look, Donald Trump means what he says, and he will say what, and he will do what he says. And it was a kind of a warning. And I by listening to Mr. Vance's speech in Munich, I kind of felt, well, this is the expression of indeed something which is going to come very quickly, very radically, that we didn't expect, because we felt with you know, President Biden being elected, we could just fall back in our little, you know, cocoon where we have been, you know, for the past 70 years and feel that, you know, the US will never actually leave us. And now they're indicating that, you know, they are very serious about the burden sharing, which, you know, a lot of American presidents have been asked us to do, but also that there is a shift towards Russia, which I think maybe we didn't anticipate. And I think we're just at the start of something radically different, which forces us to move quickly at Mr. Trump's tempo, which is not the way Europe is used to moving forward, you know.
Not the way Europe's used to moving forward. And as I said at the outset, not always the way Germany's used to moving forward. Joining our conversation is German Green member of the European Parliament, Sergei Lagondinsky. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate. The deal to break that taboo on borrowing in Germany, it was concluded between the CDU and the SPD, but they did also speak to your party because they need your consent to get it through Parliament before the outgoing session ends. What is your personal view on this?
My personal view is that this is precisely the solution that we and our members of the government, the Green members of the government, including the Vice Chancellor, have been proposing all along. We've been saying that we would need more investment and we would need to loosen the brake, the debt brake, and also invest into defense, but also beyond that, infrastructure. So basically most of the things that are proposed here. I think the problem is a little bit the manner in which this is being done, that the big parties are trying to, allegedly big parties, I mean Social Democrats are not big anymore, are trying to strike a deal between themselves, and they expect that everyone, especially the Greens, are going to follow. I don't think this is going to work this way. We would need to look at the result and to see how, for example, also the environmental issues and the environmental transition can be integrated into this. But also beyond that, this is something that should be a collaborative effort and not just something imposed and where it is expected that the Greens would follow whatever the two others are doing. So I think there is still a little bit of a work to be done, but I'm optimistic that there is a way of getting together on this issue. We understand this is an issue that is paramount. It's very important.
And you heard Senator Conway Mouret there talking about how it feels as though time has accelerated. Have the events of last Friday been a big talking point where you are in reaching this breakthrough?
I mean, obviously, but as I said, this is a breakthrough that was needed for the Christian Democrats rather than for us. We, as the Greens, have always advocated that we would need this, that in the situation of the upcoming Trump administration, we wouldn't have any other choice. And by the way, in Brussels, we're saying, and we've been saying the same. So I think that in Brussels, we will also have to do our homework in terms of the so-called own resources and how to create European money and European loans. Madame von der Leyen made these proposals a couple of days ago. Now they're being discussed in Brussels. But I think this is not going to be enough. There is not enough substance in that. There are a lot of promises, a lot of visions and concepts, but not so much substance. We don't have time for empty discussions. We need action and we need the resources.
Dominika Kozic, in your native Poland, how are people viewing this 180-degree turn from Germany?
Good evening once again. Polish people are very concerned about the situation because we are in a completely different situation than you in France, even in Germany, because we have border Belarus. And we have a very small part in Kaliningrad with Russia. So for us, military presence of American troops, it is something necessary. And when we are talking of European, it is the question of years. And we don't have this privilege to wait for years. That's why Poland, since many years, started to reinforce our own army. And now we have one of the biggest army in all European Union, and one of the biggest also in NATO, because as told me many years ago, advisor to Jimmy Carter, Polish prominent politician Zbigniew Brzeziński, it was exactly 11 years ago, just after annexation of Crimea, he told me that what Poland should do, Poland should build and should develop, invest in our own army, to be sure that just in case if Russia will think about attacking Poland, will have enough sources to defend herself as long as it is necessary to waiting for the orders. And now, of course, we are waiting for all information also from Germany about this budget. It sounds good, but it will take years, even if it will be budget for military equipment, for guns, etc. It would be, you can buy this in the first supermarket.
It'll take years. The connection's a bit choppy, so we're going to hang up and call you back to make sure that the audio is fixed. Apologies for that, Dominika. We can at this moment stay in Brussels, and France 24 Europe editor Armin Georgian, who's been following the EU summit, and you can hear our panel talk about the sense of urgency with many spooked by what appear to be Kremlin talking points coming out of the White House. What are we to expect from the summit where you are?
Well, the shadow of Donald Trump very much hangs over this summit, but he's not actually mentioned specifically in the draft summit conclusions. I think no one here wants to have a spat openly with Donald Trump. And so you've got this kind of quite tame language about the EU needs to reduce its strategic dependencies, but it's not actually saying on who. So you can kind of fill in the blank for yourself there, François. What's happening right now is that they are still discussing the chapter on defense, because you know the big talking point here on that is Ursula von der Leyen's proposed defense plan of 800 billion euros to boost European defense industries. The big bone of contention is still to come, and that is the discussion on Ukraine. And we had, I was just hearing from a source here who was saying you can either have ambitious language on Ukraine, or you can have all 27 members sign up to the same thing. So I think that was a diplomatic way of saying if they want ambitious language, then they're not going to be able to get Hungary on board. That remains to be seen, of course, but there's a few options. Either they do somehow finesse something that Hungary can sign up to, and if they can't do that, then there's a couple of options. They can either have an asterisk at the bottom of the text to say Hungary doesn't agree with this, and Viktor Orban would have to agree to that thing as well, or they could have what's called a chair statement by Antonio Costa, the president of the EU Council, which would say 27 members agree to move further on helping Ukraine. So I think that's obviously going to be a big thing to watch tonight, because the EU wants to give this strong signal of support, which in fact they did, at least verbally, to President Zelensky, who was here a little bit earlier. He's left the summit now. But whether the language in the end actually reflects that strong signal or not is, I think, going to be a key thing to watch for.
All right, many thanks, Armin Georgian, who will be checking back in with us throughout. Just briefly before we move on, very briefly, Sergei Lagundinsky, what would you prefer to see? The risk of no joint statement? These summits, the joint statements often matter. Or one that strongly backs Ukraine?
To be honest, I think the one that strongly backs Ukraine would be the preferable option, because it's very clear that with this Hungary, with this Prime Minister of Hungary, with Orban, his pro-Russian positions, we will not be able to move on. Mm-hmm. We need to move on, and this moving on in this particular area should be done without Hungary, through, for example, the enhanced cooperation. There is an opportunity that the countries who want, they will build a coalition of the willing again, and have a sort of a defense union without Hungary. Then Hungary shouldn't be there, and we don't need spoilers.
All right. Now, a lot of the question about this boosted defense, this renewed talk even about a European army, well, it turns out that it already exists. In fact, the creation of the Eurocorps was celebrated way back in 1994 with German tanks parading in France's Bastille Day parade. Those archive images that you see, General Vigilant, a reminder that there is, but let's be realistic here, kind of a symbolic European army right now that exists. I know they have a garrison in Strasbourg, I believe. Mm.
Yes, but I wouldn't call that a European army.
No.
These are European forces which can be used either by NATO, by the European Union, or in another framework. In fact, the nations, the armed forces belong to the nations. And the nations are free to use them in different frameworks. NATO is the primarily framework for the collective defense. And we have to bear in mind that NATO is primarily a European organization with the participation of our American friends and under their leadership, because we ask them to do so. But the US, they don't need NATO to project their military power anywhere in the world, including in Europe. American forces on the European continent will remain, for most of these forces, under pure American command.
Right, under pure American command. And that brings up the question of just how exposed Europe is. You heard earlier the concern of Dominika Kozic in this conversation, saying it'll take years to boost European defense. Europe doesn't have too few homegrown weapon systems. In fact, has too many, it seems. A 2022 study by the CSIS think tank bemoaned what it called a fragmented landscape. European armed forces suffer major redundancies with 29 different types of destroyers, 17 types of main battle tanks, 20 types of fighter planes, as compared to 4, 1, and 6, respectively, for the United States.
That's true. And this is something we need to fix within the European framework, both by consolidating the demand, the demand of the final of the end users, and at the same time, we have to promote, and maybe the European Commission could be helpful in this regard, we have to support the European industrial and technological defense base to develop and build big weapon system together, several countries working together. And we have to find incentives so that happens, basically.
Because okay, today, so to the viewer who's watching and who's saying he's a French Air Force pilot, of course he's going to be promoting that Europeans use the Rafale instead of the yes. F-35.
But at the same time, the French, it's very difficult for the French to understand why, when Germany says we are in an emergency, we need to spend $100 billion, and they will buy an American aircraft without even considering the European offer. And this happened as well for for the ground-based air defense. So unfortunately, in Europe, 78% of the defense spending for military equipment is made outside of the European Union, of which 63% for American military equipment. This has to change, and this will be the best way to promote a kind of strategic autonomy. We see that if we are over-reliant on external actors, we can't be sure that we will be in a good position where we face a threat.
I want to get to, in a moment, Senator, but first, Sergei Lagundinsky, you agree with the general?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is the main point. We're talking about resources all the time, but it's not just about resources, and not, it's not so much about resources. It's about structures and about political will. And in terms of structures, we're not where we have we should be. We need a common defense market to begin with, and we need a very concentrated and a very specialized, non-specialized, but a harmonized way of procurement and of development of those weapons. We don't have time. That's the problem. For example, if we're talking about satellites, it's not just about tanks. It's about satellites. The dependency, the over-dependencies of Ukrainian that we're seeing on Starlink, for example, we wouldn't be able to compensate. There is a French-British company that is considered as kind of a substitute for that, but it's not there yet. There is an IRIS program of the European Union, but it's planned for 1929, 1930. We need to accelerate this work. If we don't, then 2000, yes. That if we don't, then we are dependent on the United States, and we're seeing it now, which is very disconcerting what we're hearing, that the United States, apparently, I don't know whether this was confirmed as the news, can turn on and off HIMARS in Ukraine to be used. So many people are asking, will this happen also to the airplanes that we are using from the United States? So a lot of big questions, and we have to move now. So my hopes are that after the meeting today in Brussels, things are going to develop very fast. This is our only chance.
You confirm that?
Absolutely. When you're flying, for example, F-35, your data will first go to the US before coming back to your own country. And, for example, even the F-16, which a lot of European Air Force have, these aircraft cannot be used. I mean, they can't use the missiles without a formal authorization of the US.
It's government. Not the same with when the French sell Rafale jets to the Greeks?
Usually, no. No, absolutely
usually
not.
Usually, no.
No, but no, it is not the same. When we sell an aircraft, we sell the weapons, and we give absolutely the sovereign use of this weapon system to the customer.
Hélène Conway-Mouret, there needs to be a concentration of procurement and this realization that there's this exposure to the United States when it comes to even manning our own weapon systems.
Yes, but you see, we're torn between the short term, where we have to move fast because of Donald Trump's decisions on a daily basis, which affect us directly, and what we actually have to do. And listening to our friends in Poland or the Baltic states and so on, we realize that, in fact, they have built their entire security and defense systems on the basis of the Americans, you know, providing everything. And now we have to live with the legacy of having France, which is the only country, really, that made a decision to be totally independent, with the General de Gaulle, but even Britain, which has an army which is quite similar to ours, really, in the choices
and
that they have made,
between the two.
Is very dependent on the United States. And now there's a realization indeed that all these materials, if tomorrow, and we go as far as maybe Donald Trump passing a non-aggression pact with Vladimir Putin, why not? After all, we never thought that, you know, he would want to claim having Greenland and Canada as part of the United States. And yet he's, repeating that he wants to take over these countries. If that is the case, what is the protection that Europeans will have not being able to use the equipment that, you know, the seller, the United States, will not grant them? So I think, you know, I think it is a very strong message that we have to give our European partners who, for historical reasons, and we have to understand and respect them, still feel that they want to be nice to the Americans, that they do not want to annoy Donald Trump in case, you know, he withdraws too fast and so on, because they want to gain time. But I think, you know, they have to get the message that if they continue purchasing American equipment, if the taxpayer money in Europe is to go simply to boost the American industry, we will never move forward, and we will be so vulnerable that indeed anybody will want to take over, you know, Europe will be able to do it in the future.
Dominika Kozic, during Donald Trump's first term in office, he was very close to the then ruling Law and Justice Party, which is now in opposition. Is there consensus, though, between the opposition and the civic forum that's in power now, that over perhaps less dependency on U.S. military hardware?
There is sort of disagreement in Poland between in the case of the relation towards Trump, because, for example, current President Andrzej Duda, who was just a few hours ago in NATO meeting Mark Rutte, he has very good also personal relation with Trump, and he might be sort of bridge between Trump and other European leaders. But in contrary, Prime Minister Tusk, he is very skeptical, yes, skeptical, it is a good diplomatic word towards Trump. He a few times called on a rude, even way, Trump, so he doesn't have good relation with Trump. According to the question of American presence, I think that it is consensus. In this case, yes, not Trump, but American presence, that for a moment, it is the only one option. But, of course, I'm referring now to this, to the question of equipment. Poland made some, was buying also some stuff, not only from US, but also from Korea. So, they are exploring other markets to have this equipment, because unfortunately, after the fall of the communism system in Poland, it was a disaster for the Polish
industry. And how about buying German or buying French or buying Italian or buying...
industry, and now in Poland we...
There are lots of arms manufacturers, Dominika, and here in Europe. Is there a push to buy European in Poland?
It depends. It depends. It's hard to say yes or no.
No.
All those questions will play also a very important role now, just 3 months before, 2 months before the presidential election in Poland. We'll have on the end of May, beginning of June.
So there's division on that score. Hélène Conway-Mouret, your thoughts on this? Is Poland just one example, or is...
Poland is the country which is making the biggest effort in terms of investments and budgetary, you know, increase in defense. Now, having a discussion with the defense Polish minister, he said to me, well, we would buy Europeans if the Europeans were capable of supplying what we need, and we need it now. Now, it's not totally correct to say, well, we have to purchase Koreans because the Germans are not able to supply. And indeed, maybe it takes a bit longer. It's also more expensive to buy a German tank than it is to buy a Korean tank. But I think it's just this lack of reflex to kind of say, yes, we are Europeans. Yes, we can do things together. And if 8 years back, the industry in Europe had come together and say, okay, what systems can we build together? Because, well, we had a political will, you know, between France and Germany, for instance, with the Aix-la-Chapelle, you know, the treaty that was signed to show that, yes, indeed, we could build the future tank and the future combat system and so on, air combat system. And yet, you know, we're 8 years down the road and it hasn't happened because, you know, there are discussions and whatever. So now I think we maybe need to take it as an opportunity that we have no choice, that our European industry has to come together. We do have champions that have been pushed at national level, which are in competition with each other. Because when I travel outside of Europe, I see how much the Germans, the French and the Italians are fighting each other to be able to get, you know, they all answer the same call and they obviously want to win the market. And then it goes to Korea or Turkey or whatever, because they have been fighting so much against each other. And if we had this kind of European idea that, yes, we can have champions at European level, and I agree with what the general was saying earlier, it might work, but it will take time. And I understand fully that Poland is caught between we want things now and therefore we keep purchasing Americans because we feel, you know, we are going to keep them appeased and so on. And wanting indeed to go towards a European, you know, dimension and feel that we will be protecting them. Maybe the nuclear umbrella is one element that, you know, could be discussed and could reassure our partners.
We'll get to the nuclear umbrella in a moment, but I want to get back to something you touched on earlier, which is it's about common weapon systems and also about intelligence sharing. Adding to the urgency is Wednesday's pause in that U.S. intel sharing with Ukraine. France, for its part, says it's ready to step in.
I think for our British friends, who are still part of an intelligence community with the United States, it's more complicated. For us, our intelligence is sovereign. It took longer to build up our capabilities in recent years, but the advantage is that we did so using our own resources. So yes, we have intelligence capabilities, and we're sharing them with the Ukrainians.
And by the way, coincidence of the calendar, this Thursday, the inaugural commercial flight of Europe's next generation Ariane 6 Ariane 6 rocket from the European Space Station in French Guiana. Its payload for that maiden voyage is a French spy satellite. Sergei Lagundinsky, you were talking earlier about the overdependence on Elon Musk's Starlink. Intelligence sharing, how do you see it going forward? And is it just an EU remit, or do you bring the British into that?
I think we should talk about coalition and of the willing going beyond EU members. And this is something that we're seeing now. We're seeing this as also a chance, an opportunity to re-engage with our British friends. I remember during the Brexit phase, I was keen on putting into the agreement with our UK partners, departing UK partners, a clause about a common platform on security and foreign policy, and they did not want it. I'm very happy to see that now, 5-6 years later, we are having a different situation where we can join forces and also share intelligence. Of course, this is something that goes without saying. The question is, do we have the capabilities that Americans have? Our French partners will have to explain to me whether this is the case, because the most valuable piece of information for our Ukrainian partners now is the real-time intelligence. So when, for example, an airplane carrying bombs is starting somewhere on the Russian territory, that the United States can detect it right away, give this information, pass this information to Ukrainians, and they can activate anti-missile systems or protection for their cities in real time. This is something that, as far as I understand, is very difficult to provide by European forces. I'm very happy if the French are capable of doing so, then this is the way to go.
Jean-Marc Vigilon, is it possible?
Yes, we have this capability, but not at the same scale than the US. Therefore, we will step in, but we won't be able to replace all the capability the US are providing currently. However, I would say that we have to take a step back and consider the current situation from a more strategic perspective. Because, in fact, what the US are doing, they've been trying for the last decade to move military resources from Europe to Asia, which is their priority. And every time there was a reason, Ukraine, Russia, in the Middle East, to keep these resources out of Asia. Then, what is doing Trump currently? He doesn't want anymore to support Ukraine. But I think that with regard to the European, we have the possibility to discuss with the current US administration to organize the transition from a US-led NATO to a more European-led NATO. And this will give us the time to build our own capabilities and to organize the decrease of American support to the European operations in Europe.
Can you negotiate this transition, again, if the White House seems to be doing Russia's bidding when they sit down with Volodymyr Zelensky?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, everything is open. And usually we say that the one who play the pipe set the tune. If we are paying more for our defense, we will be in a good position to claim operational command position in NATO, for example. But we have to commit more budget to develop our own military capabilities.
All right. And there's been meetings that have been taking place among European allies. There was one hosted by Britain on Wednesday that took place behind closed doors. Both Britain and France offering to extend their nuclear umbrella to European allies.
Our nuclear deterrent protects us. It is complete, sovereign, fully French. I decided to open the strategic debate on the protection through our nuclear deterrent of our allies in the European continent.
And Hélène Conway-Mouret, first of all, the Russians have bristled at this, saying it's a threat, comparing Macron to Napoleon trying to take Moscow. Those are the words of Vladimir Putin. The nuclear umbrella, didn't that already exist with Article 5 of NATO?
Yes, but Article 5 of NATO is not credible anymore,
which
I
is
think.
When one nation's attack, sorry, just remind to our viewers, yes. One nation's attack, they're all under attack and you rush their aid.
Yes, absolutely. But I think it has lost its credibility with the United States kind of saying, well, we might or we might not. I mean, the idea is that, yes, indeed, if one is touched, all respond. It's like the musketeers, you know, all for one, one for all. But if there's one missing, then the whole thing collapses. So I think we also have Article 42.7 within the European Union, which is actually more binding than Article 5 is, because in the way Article 5 is phrased, there is the possibility to indeed
choose,
okay? There is not in Article 42.7. So I think now we need to kind of move towards indeed kind of saying, well, we have this possibility, and to be very careful as to the terms that we use. It is not about sharing the nuclear deterrence. It's about extending it. And if we extend it, you see, France has always had the position of having a non-proliferation attitude, and therefore keeping a number of nuclear heads that are sufficient, strong and precise enough to be a deterrent when used. Now, if it is to be extended to the whole continent, obviously the number ought to be increased. And possibly we always have a submarine, you know, in a possibility, you know, like ready to actually launch a warhead. All of that needs to be reviewed. I'm trying to kind of go into the details, but I think it's very important for people to understand that, yes, it is possible. But it has to be negotiated as to who can have it. And it's also from a budgetary point of view. And as I am looking after the budget of the equipment of the French armed forces, I'm very keen. Deterrence is extremely expensive.
So the words of Emmanuel Macron, General, are they a change in policy, or is this simply a statement to keep the Russians honest?
Oh, no. What is saying the president, and he's not the first to say that, but what he's saying currently is that he's ready to discuss with the European allies about the way to create a European nuclear deterrent. And there are several ways of doing so. By way of example, the US currently has two sets of nuclear forces. They have their own national nuclear forces, nuclear deterrent in the US, and they have what they call an extended nuclear deterrent, which basically are, you know, there are some nuclear bombs, American bombs, stationed in on European basis in Europe, in five countries. And then we see that this can be done, having a national posture, a nuclear deterrent, and an extension of this nuclear deterrent. And what is doing the president is just starting the discussion with the allies so that we can improve our common understanding of the strategic situation. And at the same time, France, having been a permanent member of the UNSCR, of the United Nations Security Council, it knows exactly how deterrent works, which is not the case for most of our European allies. So they need to learn from us, and we will share our knowledge. We will help them to increase their understanding of what it means to be a nuclear power, basically. And then we will find a way to do it from a technical point of view.
Sergei Lagunitsky, how do Germans feel about all this? The Germans have a strong pacifist tradition after World War II on this matter. Your own party was in the 1980s against proliferation of any sort. Your thoughts on this discussion and the way the French president is broaching it?
I mean, it's a hugely difficult discussion, and this is not our preferred option and preferred choice to talk about nuclear deterrence being proliferated or expanded. And this is the luxury that we had in the European continent. We've been comfortable under the umbrella of the Americans. We didn't have to do much. And by the way, Germany doesn't have to learn much about how to be part of a deterrence program. We do have the nuclear sharing, where also is heavily debated in Germany in terms of having the nuclear warheads placed on German territory, having a say on how things are developed, having special planes that are providing those special planes, etc., etc. But I think that we are in such a monumental historical change and monumental historical shifts that also the population here in Germany starts to realize it's time to depart from certain dogmatic issues and at least question the premises that we had so far. And one of the premises is, does it have to be the way it was with the umbrella? We will need to answer the question, a very technical question of what is with the non-proliferation treaty. If we go down that path, we will probably have to leave non-proliferation treaty. This is a huge, huge responsibility, and this has to be calculated. I think that the debate that Macron has started is the right one. I'm not sure we will arrive to answers on the debate soon. The problem is Macron is not going to be there forever. And we know that the chances are that the successor of Macron might be a problematic figure as well. So these are also political questions that are being asked here also in Germany.
If we'd had more time, we would have talked about Marine Le Pen, the front runner so far from the far right for 2027, and her more nuanced, some say even skeptical views when it comes to European defense. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank you, Sergei Lagunitsky, for being with us from Berlin. I want to thank Dominika Kozic for being with us from Brussels. Hélène Conway-Mouret, Jean-Marc Vigilant, thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.